Welcome to Megabucks Radio. Conversations with successful entrepreneurs, sharing their tips and strategies for success. Real world ideas that can put Megabucks in your bank account. Here's your host, Nina Hirschberger.
Welcome to today's show. This is Nina Hirschberger. And today I have Scott Hartley on the phone with me. He is a entrepreneur, as you know, because I love entrepreneurs. I love interviewing them. And he started a company that ended up a multi-six-figure-a-year business from scratch. And he just sold that. But he took that knowledge and that experience, and he's sharing a very specific kind of thing with other entrepreneurs, other business owners. So welcome to today's show, Scott.
Hey, Nina, glad to be here. Appreciate it.
So let's get right into it. Tell us what business you just sold.
Yeah, so I sold my IT company that I started way back in September of 2004. That was quite an interesting journey, to be honest. So back at that time, I had a lot of people that were, friends and family and everything that were reaching out to me to, kind of fix their computer problems. And I was like, okay, everybody's calling me to help them. I need to start making some money from this. And so I just started up a business. And I had no clue what I didn't know. And I'm just kind of like, figuring things out, like business formation, the business licenses, taxes, all that kind of stuff. And, as an entrepreneur, you're pretty scrappy and you kind of like figure things out as they come up. And it really wasn't all that long that, I really started getting some good traction, which was really surprising because I'm from Southwest Indiana, a very small community. Our county size is only about 30,000 people. And so starting up a successful business in that environment can be a little challenging, especially when you're focusing mostly on residential clients. And so throughout the years, I kind of like, just kind of did the normal small business owner thing. And then I came into the world of Dan Kennedy and GKIC. And wow, were my eyes opened to like, oh my goodness, there's all this marketing stuff that you can actually do that works and that gets you customers and helps you grow. And so that was probably about 2009, 2010, somewhere in there. And so I started, adopting and implementing the teachings of Dan and the team at GKIC and quickly started seeing some results. And it was about 2013 that they turned me on to an automation software that at that time was called Infusionsoft. It's now called Keep. And it was like you can basically put your marketing on autopilot. And so one of the very first things that I did was I broke one of Dan Kennedy's rules. So, like marketing should never be a one-shot type of thing, right? So you should always do it in a series. But I was promoting to our list a PC tune-up service. And basically it was twice a year. So it was a continuity type program. So they prepaid for two PC tune-up services, and then we would just renew that year after year. Well, instead of doing a physical mailing, I thought, let me just do this by email. And let me see how this works. And I was still figuring out the software. So I sent out one email. And I think that very first time that I sent it out, I got like 13 or 14 people that took advantage of that offer. And I was like, wow, this actually works. And so I kept repeating it and refining it. And of course, then I was doing it the right way, according to Dan, with a multi-step strategy. And, that service really took off. It was a core part of our business for a lot of our residential clients. So anyway, long story short, yeah, I took that business from absolutely zero to a multi six-figure-a-year business. And I am so glad to be out of that because I was really getting tired of technology in 2017, 2018, just kind of burnt out with all of the changes that were coming. And I had fallen in love with marketing. So I was like, man, how can I actually help small businesses avoid some of the things that I had to go through and help them shortcut their path to success. And so in 2018, I started, you know, kind of that journey with my current company, Master Plan for Success, and helping other small business owners really implement marketing strategies and automation to help them grow.
Oh, wow. I've got so many questions. That was fabulous. Let's go back, though. All right. So first of all, I mean, I wrote a few notes down here, but let's talk about continuity service. Well, no, I'm going to go even further back. You said that you primarily dealt with residential only. You never got into the commercial market?
We had a few. I mean, in the community that I'm in, most of our businesses aren't really what I would consider even quote unquote small businesses. They're more micro business. So think the mom and pop type of stores and, you know, just kind of like the small, very small businesses and stuff like that. So really, you know, at that time, they were almost like a residential client because maybe they had one computer in their store, you know. So, yeah, so most of our clients were those small ones. We did have a couple of business clients, like we had a funeral home that, you know, had multiple computers just because they had multiple staff and a couple that had some servers. But they were a very, very small part of our business.
So because it was residential, you couldn't wait until the phone rang and said, I need help, Scott. You developed
right.
that continuity service then.
Yeah. You know, one of the things is, you know, just kind of like being creative. And you know, when you're working on computers, you know, like, there's going to be problems. You know, it's technology. And the more proactive that you can be, the better off it is because then you have less reactive work. And so one of those things was like every 6 months, you really need to have your computer checked out by a professional. And it needs to be cleaned up. It needs to be tuned up, just like you take your car in for an oil change. And so I thought, why can't I do that in my IT business and then promote that? And eventually we had a good number, I think close to like 50, 60 clients that were on that continuity program at one point in time.
Would you say, knowing different kind of businesses that you've, you know, seen or worked with in the past, would you say, I remember Dan always saying in the past, the biggest regret he ever had was that he did not have a continuity sooner. Would you agree with that? Would you think any business could figure out some sort of continuity?
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, I didn't know what I didn't know in the early days of my business. So I was kind of like, man, I wish I would have found Dan and the GKIC family a whole lot earlier than what I did, because who knows where I could have, you know, really taken that business. But once I started learning about continuity and subscriptions or memberships, it's like, that lit a fire. Like everything that I was doing, I was like, how can I actually make this work? So interesting. So one of the other continuity programs that is kind of common with a lot of IT shops is providing antivirus protection for computers. So now a lot of them at the time when we started doing this, like you would pay annually for your antivirus protection, which was nice because you had a good, you know, cash flow coming in for those annual subscriptions. But the problem was that at the end of that year, sometimes people would forget what they had subscribed for. And it was always so difficult to get that renewal. So a little tweak that I made is instead of billing annually for our antivirus, I changed it to monthly. And so at the beginning of every month, we were having consistent revenue come in and, you know, and people were not forgetting what their subscription was for. So just making those little tweaks was really, really helpful. But everything that I did, I was like, how can we turn this into continuity revenue?
Yeah, that's really interesting. So I was, we have a dog, and we have a little schnauzer. If he barks, you'll know that's Max. but anyway, the vet that we go to, now Max only goes in once a year for his shots, once a year for his checkup and everything, but we are on a continuity every month, $39, so that Max, you know, when that year comes around. So, yeah, it doesn't have to be a once a year. In fact, I think you're right. I think monthly is the way to go for most everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just, you know, it helps with cash flow from the business perspective, but it also keeps you top of mind with your client as well. And, you know, they know what they're paying for. They know what that service is. And, you know, if it's something that they don't take advantage of, you know, every single month. So like you with Max, you know, you're probably not going to the vet every month, but when you see that, you know, credit card statement show up, you know that you have that service and you have that peace of mind, like, hey, I've got this, you know, for when we need that.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I know in a minute we're going to be talking about emails, and that's part of what you've really, really nailed down. But did you do any kind of printed newsletter? You know, Dan's big into newsletters.
We did. So I don't remember what year we actually started with that. But I, you know, I picked up the idea from Dan and, you know, and Sean Buck was in his community as well. And I got Sean's book about, you know, the importance of newsletters. And, so we just did it in house. Like I wrote everything. We printed it out on 11 by 17 paper. I hired a high school student to, fold stuff and, stamp the envelopes and we dropped it in the mail. We sent it out to our key, residential clients and then some of our prospects. So our list was constantly growing. I think at some points in time we were well over 500 emails, or 500 print newsletters that we were sending out every single month. And it was interesting. It took a little while for that to get some traction. So I would say probably about 8 months before we really started seeing results coming from the newsletter. But then when I would go out to, you know, Walmart or I'd be out shopping or wherever, like I would have people come up to me. It's like, hey, I got your newsletter last week and that recipe that you had in it was really awesome, you know, and they would hang on to it. And then we started seeing sales come in as a result of it because we would be talking about some services that we were offering or particular computer problems, things like that. But it was really, really key to helping create some, you know, continuity in our business as well as just even getting some new customers.
So in that newsletter, was it 100% talking about computers or was it, I mean, you just mentioned a recipe, but what percentage would you say is just kind of fun stuff?
We did about 50-50. So, you know, like the cover story was typically about something, you know, related to the computer, you know, and I tried to make that the lead of the story, you know, really interactive, you know, maybe talking about, you know, something that I had experienced or, you know, read or whatever. And so about half of the newsletter was related to IT stuff. And then the other stuff was just kind of like fun. So we would kind of mix it up. We'd put recipes, we'd do puzzles, we'd put, you know, just little word searches, whatever, in there, some cartoons, just to kind of mix it up and so that it wasn't a boring thing, but it was something like, oh, what's in the newsletter this month when they actually saw it.
Now, did you print it in four color? Did you print it in one color? What did it look like?
Yeah, we did full color. So like I said, we had our own copier in the office there, printed on 11 by 17, did full color, folded it in half, and I actually mailed it in a 6x9 envelope. And then on the outside of the envelope, I teased what was inside that newsletter. So, you know, a couple bullet points on it so that they have a little mystery of like, oh, I wonder what he's talking about when he says that.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah, I am a personal fan of actually one or two colors. And here's it's only a personal preference. Is there something psychologically that happens when somebody does a full color? They think, oh, they spent too much money. And so mm-hmm. I always try to make it look a little more homegrown. But brilliant, brilliant that you actually did that. Now, what about packages? You talked about continuity, but did you do packages as well?
We tried a couple things with packages, but they didn't really take off. So we tried to create a couple of bundle packages where it included like antivirus and data backup. And then we had like another higher ticket package, which was antivirus, data backup, and the PC tune-up service. We had another one that included some level of remote support every month, just in case that they had an issue and it was something that we could resolve remotely. We had a very small handful of clients that took advantage of that. But for whatever reason, either my messaging was off or something, but it never really like took hold and had a large number of our clients on that.
So primarily what you sold was PC tune-up, and antivirus.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously a lot of people were reaching out to us for, you know, computers crash all the time, you know, hard drives fail, just the general, you know, slowness of computers, a lot of different things. And we were seeing a lot, especially back in, you know, 2009 to probably 2014, 15 or so, a lot of virus infections. And especially the clients that weren't on our antivirus system, we were getting people that were getting infected left and right. They'd be bringing their computers in two or three times a year because their computers would get infected. Interesting note, talking about antivirus protection, it was probably about 2015, 2016-ish. I don't remember exactly. But we implemented a brand new antivirus solution for our clients. And it was a premium. So it wasn't inexpensive. It was $11.99 a month. So, I mean, it was not horribly expensive, but it was pricier than the consumer-grade antivirus. But the minute that we rolled that out to well over 100 of our regular clients, virus removal services went to zero.
So you killed one part of your business.
We killed one part of our business, but I was okay with that because it was best for the client. And yeah. So we had, you know, a guarantee, you know, with that antivirus protection. And we still, you know, the person who bought the company still uses that antivirus protection today. And again, like literally zero problems with viruses on any of the computers that have that on it.
Well, you said $11.99, so I'm going to do 12. 12 times 12 is 144 times, you said, about 100 clients. I mean, every month, that's 14,400, the first of the month, that's in your bank account.
Yep, exactly.
And you didn't have to do anything.
Right. And, you know, and they knew that they had that peace of mind, and it was a whole lot easier doing it on that month to month instead of going once a year and trying to get that $144.
Yeah. So that makes sense. So you sold your business and now you're segue. Well, first of all, did you start using email so effectively in your business before you sold it? And then is that what made you such an expert in email marketing?
Yeah. So in 2013, I started using an email marketing software, really started leveraging it alongside of normal direct mail, the print newsletters, sales letters that were getting mailed out, postcards, events and stuff that we were doing. So I really got into the email because it was just another touch point that, you know, made it faster and easier for us to reach our prospects and our clients. And of course, in the world of IT, sometimes there's some important information that needs to get delivered sooner rather than later. And so email was a great way to actually deliver that information. Hey, there's a new update that needs to be installed on your computer. That needs to happen this week. You know, you can't wait for the mail to actually get there. So an email was a great platform to communicate those type of things. So I really started using email heavily in our business and, you know, just kind of like learn the nuances of like, how do you get those emails delivered? How do you get people to open them and read them and then take action upon it? All of that stuff that's related to emails. As I started learning the system and of course applying Dan's principles that really took hold.
Okay. So let's get into that. First of all, let's talk about deliverability. We all know that everybody gets so many emails. A lot of them could go into spam. A lot of them can go into never, never land, whatever. How do you know that you're getting your emails delivered?
Well, there's not an easy way to know if your emails are getting delivered or not. I mean, obviously, if you're not getting a lot of bounce backs, you know, bounce messages saying, hey, this email couldn't be delivered, you can assume that, you know, at least it's landing somewhere in your recipients' inboxes. Now, it may not be, you know, in the inbox. It might be junk or spam. It might be the promotions folder. It might be the updates folder, whatever. But, yeah, there's a lot that goes into getting your emails delivered that I didn't know when I first started doing a lot of email marketing. You know, and there's so many things that as I talk with more and more small business owners, and practically everybody's using email now. So small business owners gravitate to it because, one, it's expected. Like, oh, you have to do email marketing in your business. Number two, it's relatively cheap. Like, it doesn't cost you anything to send an email, whereas it now costs, what, 63 cents to send a first-class letter. You know, all you have is your subscription to whatever software it is that you're using. So you could send out 1 million emails a month and it would cost you practically zero per email. And so people are gravitating towards, you know, using email heavily in their business, but a lot of times they don't think about, like, oh, I'm sending this. Is it actually getting me a result? Because really everything that we do in our business should drive towards some sort of result.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that, you know, and you're not saying one or the other, you're saying both and.
Absolutely.
Both the traditional offline kind of, and when you said in your business, I mean, you had about 500, but you, those were current customers or prospects. So, I mean, you know, you whittled down that list. So, okay, let's assume that the email got delivered. Now, how do I catch their attention so that they will even pay attention?
Yeah, so the number one, you need to do everything in your power to make sure that those emails are landing where they're going to see them, right? So just because an email gets delivered doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to land in the folder that they check the most often, which is going to be their inbox, right? Or maybe their promotions tab. Now, I'm going to take a little rabbit trail here because I get this objection a lot from people who are using marketing automation platforms. So things like Keep or MailChimp or AWeber, whatever that it is, I hear a lot of complaints, but my emails are going to the promotions folder. And people are like so panicky about that. Here's the thing. The promotions folder is not hurting you. So some studies have been done that show that really all of your Gmail users, only about 20% of them actually have the promotions tab turned on. So that means 80% of people see every single email that comes into their, what we call the inbox. Secondly, Gmail considers the promotions and the updates tab part of the inbox. It's not actually a separate box. It's the inbox, you know, considered by Google. And then if you look at your list, depending on your list, somewhere it can be, you know, like 20 to 40% of your list might be Gmail type addresses. So people that are using gmail.com or maybe like myself, who's a business that uses Google Workspace, you know, we're still, you know, the backbone is still Google. Of the people that do have the promotions tab enabled and the people that are on your list that are on Gmail, realistically, less than 0.1% of your list is affected by your emails going to promotions or updates. So to major on the minors is really a waste of your time because it's really not costing you any sales or any opens or anything like that.
So take a deep breath.
Yeah,
let it go.
Exactly.
And focus on other things.
Focus on other things. The thing that you really want to focus on is, are those emails going to junk or spam? That's the worst place because nobody ever checks their junk or spam folder because it gets filled up immediately. And that's something that you do have control over. Right. So there's a lot that goes into that. And obviously I wrote a book about, you know, that covers those in pretty good detail. But the number one thing that every small business owner should concentrate on is the engagement of their list. All right. The engagement of their list. And that's more than just opens. So obviously your mail software is going to say, oh, X number of people opened this email. It's also going to show the number of people that clicked on a link in that email. Those are very, very important metrics. And here is another thing that I get challenged on all the time by small business owners. When I'm consulting with them on getting their emails delivered and I do an audit of their app and I look at their list, I see that they've been blasting their entire list for the past year. And we have a very small segment that's engaged of regular people that are regularly opening the emails, regularly clicking on the links in the emails, and doing good things with those emails. And a large portion of their list hasn't opened anything in more than 90 days. And in some cases, some people have never opened anything at all. And my first suggestion, my first recommendation is stop emailing those people who have not engaged with your email in longer than 90 days. And they
would
don't want to do
it. Clean out that list? In other words, delete them from your list altogether?
I don't necessarily say delete them, because you might have some valuable data there. Depending on the platform that you use, you might actually have their physical mailing address or maybe their phone number associated with it. Maybe, you know, there's other notes that you have on that contact record. So I don't necessarily say delete it, but if they haven't opened anything, stop emailing them. Like, prune your list so that they're not getting emails from you, because that's actually hurting you. Even for the people who are opening and getting your emails, the people who aren't are actually bringing you down. So you can keep them in your database, and if you've got this other information, now's a great time to go offline with them. Send them a postcard, send them a letter, or phone, you know, worst case, make a phone call. And now you can have an opportunity to maybe get them back on your email list, but like, stop emailing them. And I get the biggest pushback from that, because people are so afraid. But they might one day buy something from me. They haven't opened an email ever. How are they going to buy anything if they've never opened one of your emails? You know,
which could mean it's going to spam anyway.
Right. Yeah.
Well, you know, one thing I should have said before we even started this email conversation is I am astonished. You must have a better clientele than I see around our area, but I'm astonished how many business owners don't even have a list. Whether it's physical, whether it's email, they don't have a list. They've never communicated with their list. What they're doing is hoping that, you know, new people will fall through the funnel.
Well, you know, it's interesting. A lot of people, they have a list of some sort. Now, it may not be organized. You know, it may be in an Excel spreadsheet. It might be a list in their Outlook database or their Google Contacts or something like that. So they don't really consider that a list. But one of the key things that you just said there is they don't communicate with it. So this is another challenge that I encounter. I have spoken with small business owners that maybe they have some sort of marketing automation platform set up, and they have some semblance of a list in there. It might just be 20 people, but they don't want to email them. And if they do, they only want to do it once a year or once every 6 months. Like, if that's the frequency that you want to have, email marketing is not going to work for you in the current landscape, because Microsoft, Google, and Yahoo, they look at engagement. That's one of the number one things that they look at. When was the last time somebody actually did something with your email? And if it was 6 months ago or a year ago, they're like, this person doesn't want to get it. We're just going to deliver it straight to the spam folder.
Huh, interesting. So, okay, so how do you overcome that fear, and what is the right frequency of, and what kind of emails should they be getting? In other words, should they be pitching on something every time, or what is it?
Oh, those are great questions. So, and I'm going to, you know, a lot of people are going to sit back in shock as they listen to this. They're going to be like, there's no way, Scott, I can do that. Nope, just can't do it. But you can. My recommendation, and the way that you're going to get the best results from your email marketing, is you need to be communicating with your list at least weekly. 52 times a year, you need to be communicating with your list once every week. And the reason for that is that, again, Microsoft, Google, and Yahoo, they look at engagement, and they use different time frames to judge that engagement. Microsoft is the most draconian. They look at 14 days. Has somebody done something with one of your emails within the last 14 days? If it's day 15, they're unengaged. So that's why you need to have that frequency of at least once a week. Now, to the question, don't pitch in every single email. That's the fastest way to turn somebody off, and they're either unsubscribe or they're going to mark you as spam, and that's going to hurt you even more with getting your emails delivered even to the people who want them. So provide value. Educate your list about what it is that you do and how this affects them, how this, you know, can benefit them. You know, there's a lot of different ratios out there, but, you know, one sales email for every four or five that you send is a pretty good cadence. You know, you kind of have to test it out with your list to see what they will accept. But if you're providing value, people won't mind the occasional sales email saying, hey, we've got this thing to offer you. Would you be interested in it?
Well, Scott, I got your book. And one of the things you did is you gave two bonuses. And one of the bonuses is sitting right here in front of me. It's 143 attention-grabbing subject lines. And I'm telling you, this is probably one of the most valuable things that's crossed my desk in a long time. And here's why. Just reading through here can give you an idea of what to write in that email. So, for instance, let me give, she blew through her savings. You know, I don't know. I mean, maybe there's a story that you can tell about somebody who did something. It's just a thought-provoking, I always say I help business owners a lot write their own book, write their lead generation book. And one of the problems is when anybody's going to sit down to write anything is the blank screen. Yep. What do I say? I can't write that newsletter. I don't know what to say, which is why CPT has worked so well, as it gives them a lot of ideas and stuff. Mm-hmm. But just having this list is fantastic.
Yeah. And I sat down because, you know, in talking with clients about writing emails, it's one thing to get them delivered. And there's a lot that goes into that. And I cover that in the 76 pages in my book, that it's really easily digestible. And it breaks down, you know, how do you get the emails to land in the inbox? Once they're there, the next thing is getting them opened. And that's the job of the subject line. And a lot of people are like, I don't know what to put here. You know, like, how do I write this subject line? So I sat down and I went through all 143 subject lines that you see in that document are from actual emails that I've received from a wide variety of people. And those are the ones that grabbed my attention. They made me open that email to see what was inside. And so I was like, this is going to be helpful. This is going to be helpful to me. Like, you know, I don't like sitting at a computer and typing this email. Okay, what should be the subject line on this thing? It's going to get people open. I can go to this list and I can model the framework that's on there and plug in my own information so that it's just as compelling and mystery, you know, curiosity inducing to get them to open the email. And then, of course, the content of it needs to deliver what that email subject line has promised.
Yeah, bingo. And what about the email inside itself? Is there a certain thing that you would predict or would suggest for length, for font, for size, any kind of cadence in the email? What's your recommendation there?
So one of the things that I tout on the outside of cover of my book is inside I tell you why you should ditch the email newsletter and what to send instead. A lot of people want to make their emails so beautiful, so pretty. You know, when people open it up, they're going to be like, oh, wow, this is the greatest thing since sliced bread. That's not what people think when they see a beautifully designed email. They're like, oh, I don't have time for this. I'll get back to it later. And as we all know, later never comes, right? The best thing that you can do with your emails is write them as if you were writing to one individual person and make it personal and make it about one thing. Don't try to stuff, you know, 15 different things in there, 5 different calls to action, 7 different images. Like if I were writing an email to you, Nina, Like, it's going to be from my regular email account. It's going to be, hey, Nina, and then I'm just going to have a few sentences, maybe a couple short paragraphs about what I want to talk to you about, and then I'm going to close, and I'm going to hit send. That's how all of your email marketing should really be done. Now, if you want to include some links in the email, I recommend no more than three, because, you know, you don't want to give people too many options, because if they're faced with too many options, they do nothing. And you don't want to load it up with a lot of images, because a lot of images flags those as marketing type of emails, and that can cause it to not get delivered to the inbox.
Interesting. What about font? Is that a big deal or not a big deal?
Font, it's something that you can kind of play around with. Generally, I don't recommend using any more than two different fonts in an email. But again, if you're sitting at your computer, you open up Outlook, or you open up Gmail, and you're typing an email, guess what? They give you one font to use, you know, and that's sufficient for the purpose of that email. So just use the one font, make it in a readable size, because some of us, like myself, are getting older and it's hard to read, you know, those smaller fonts. So I recommend like a 14 or maybe even a 16 point type if you're using, you know, an email marketing software. But, you know, make it readable. And again, remember, a lot of people are reading their emails on their mobile devices. So you want to keep it relatively short in the email, and then you can direct them to your website where you can then use long form copy or have a video or something like that to where they will spend more time on that page.
Well, Scott, I am looking at the clock, and unfortunately is not my friend today, because this has been fascinating. But I do know that I asked before we got on the show whether or not you had something special that you could offer, because every single person listening to this could really take advantage of your knowledge and stuff. So do you have something you want to share with the audience and offer to them?
Sure. I would love for everybody to get a copy of my book. It's called Hit the Inbox, How to Avoid the Spam Folder and Grow Your Business with Email Marketing. In it, I cover everything that we talked about today and a whole lot more. So, you know, we talk about the promotions tab. We talk about the how to optimize the four key sections of your content. We talk about the three pieces of identification to make sure you're driving legally on the email marketing highway. We didn't even touch on that today. That's a whole conversation in and of itself. But 92% of small business owners are driving illegally on the email marketing highway, and they're going to get pulled over, and it's going to cause major problems for them. So knowing what those are and how to avoid that is really key. And also something else, and this was a came from my own personal experience that I talk about in the book, is how to know when it's time to fire your website host. If you're using certain providers out there for where you're hosting your website, and some of them are the big name providers that are hosting websites, they can cause problems with getting your emails delivered to the inbox, and you probably don't even know it. And so I cover that, but everybody should really get a copy of my book. It's 76 pages. I had a client recently buy it, and he said, hey, I read it in the bath. So he took a bubble bath one night and consumed the book, you know, while he was just sitting there relaxing. And he said it was a great read. Yeah, I've priced it affordably. It's $7. I mean, like two lattes at Starbucks, I think, you know, you can get this, and it's actually going to benefit your business. Like you mentioned earlier, Nina, there's a couple bonuses that you get. One is the 143 attention grabbing subject line. The other one is my marketing messaging checklist that helps you write the content for your email to make sure you're including the important things that will actually get you results from your email marketing. So you get all that for $7. Hittheinboxbook.com is where you can go to get your copy of that. $7 for the digital copy. Hittheinboxbook.com. And I appreciate you sharing that with your audience.
Yeah. And Scott, if somebody wants to reach out to you and perhaps use your business, your master plan for success business, how would you like them to reach out?
Sure. So one of the best ways to get a hold of me is LinkedIn. If you connect with me on LinkedIn, that's a great way to connect. You can message me on there. If you want to email me directly, that would be fine too. Scott@masterplan4success.com. So it's Scott@masterplan4success.com.
Well, this has been awesome. The first thing I'm going to do is go and I'm going to create in my CRM. I use Entreport actually. I'm going to create a group that's just the ones who have responded, and I'm going to get rid of. I'm not going to delete them, but I am going to only send. So that was a fabulous tip for me personally, and of course all of these 143 ideas. So. Thank you, Scott, for your time, for your willingness to share this. It's been a true pleasure to interview you on this show.
I appreciate the opportunity, and if you or any of your audience has any questions, happy to answer those and help you out.
Perfect. So this is Nina Hershberger. This is the end of another show, so go out and make it a great day.
Thank you for listening to Megabucks Radio with Nina Hershberger. To learn more about the resources mentioned on today's show or to listen to past episodes, visit megabucksradio.com.